Hello, I'm Matt Consalvo. This is number 0104, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0104. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Aaron Lapidus, who is the author of The Garage Sale Millionaire. With the popularity of shows like Storage Wars and the economy the way it is right now, do a lot of people think this is their way to wealth?
Because of the bad economy, yes, there are a few more auctions, but now there are a ton of bidders because of these TV shows. And the concern is, well, my concern is, a lot of people, I'm finding out, are giving up their jobs or not looking for new jobs because they think they can do what these people are doing on TV, which is becoming very scary.
Keith Mitchell is a former NFL linebacker who is now a certified yoga instructor. There was a time when you would never have heard NFL player and yoga in the same sentence.
Times are changing, but it's much needed for the industry. I mean, you take such a beating playing a game, and you know, it's just a rehabilitative type healing process for athletes who put themselves through such traumatic situations.
Annette Martin is the author of The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. Just how haunted is San Francisco?
Oh, it's pretty haunted. It really is. And I booked The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. It's really a one-of-a-kind guidebook that shows you how to find publicly accessible haunted places that lie unsuspected in San Francisco's most famous tourist destination.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0104, is Matt Consalvo, who is a cameraman at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. He also does some camera work for electrorevs.com, which features online reviews of electronic equipment. And thank you very much, Matt, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, you know, there's an election going on in the United States, but let's go to another country's election to see how things are going on over there. Regarding the current presidential race in Russia, things are getting, well, weird. Maybe you've heard about Putin's army. This is a group of women who go around taking some or all of their clothes off to show support for Prime Minister Putin. Now, last month, some members stripped to bikinis and washed cars in a soft porn tribute to the prime minister. Well, in Moscow, now there's a rival group showing support for current president Dmitry Medvedev. Activists from the Medvedev Girls said they are taking off their clothes to support the president's initiative to cut down on the public beer drinking. It seems in Russia they have a lot of people just walking around drinking a cold one, so they invited members of the public strolling on Pushkin Square to pour their cans of beer into buckets. When the beer reached a certain level, they started taking off their clothes. They then hurled the buckets of beer down the gutter as they performed a striptease to reveal T-shirts with the slogan, "Choose beer or us." Wow. We never see campaigns like that over here, do we? Yeah. Anyway, DUIs being given out to idiots driving riding lawnmowers has become so commonplace it's almost not worth mentioning anymore. But here's one with an interesting twist. In Walton County, Georgia, 54-year-old Michael Murden was arrested and charged with driving under the influence for driving his riding lawnmower down a residential street. But what first caught everyone's attention was that he was also pulling a camping trailer behind it. His criminal background already includes 6 prison sentences. 1 was for drug possession. I'm guessing there was more alcohol in that camping trailer, by the way. Okay, there's lots to see and do at the Mississippi Valley Fair in Davenport, Iowa. just stay away from the Cookie Monster. Police arrested James Lester Rogers, who was greeting children and families at the state entrance in a Cookie Monster costume from the popular TV show Sesame Street. The problem is Rogers is a convicted sex offender and is not allowed to be around children or on fairgrounds. So how did they know it was him? Well, the idiot outed himself when he took off the head of the costume to say hello to a former parole supervisor. The supervisor recognized Rogers, who had been convicted of committing sexual acts against a minor, and called police. At the time, Rogers was working for a new company called QC Characters. The business was not contracted by the fair and was simply using the opportunity to do some free advertising. The business owner, who doesn't want to be identified, go figure, I wonder why, is apologizing to the entire community and said, "I should have taken my time and done a background check, but this guy needed a job, so I kind of put him in the costume right away." Yeah, good call. Cookie Monster can now face a maximum of 2 years in prison for being at a fair in a costume. Yeah, the question is, whose cookies was he actually after? And finally, in this section of the Stuff File News, here's one way to get rid of unwanted tenants. In Shenzhen, China, a real estate company is being investigated for allegedly releasing several thousand scorpions into apartments at a residential complex to force residents to move out in order to make way for a new construction project. One resident awoke to find his bedroom full of scorpions, one of which was crawling on his body. He and his family captured several hundred scorpions in his apartment. Turns out other residents had the same experience. Witnesses saw a man holding a bucket walking out of the office of the real estate firm that wants to build a new project at the complex. The man poured something from the bucket into apartment windows. Police and residents spent the whole night capturing over 100 pounds of scorpions. Okay, that's just wrong and evil on so many levels. Although it does capture a few creative style points, don't you think? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? The usually popular television show Storage Wars on A&E is inspiring a whole new wave of bidders to try their luck in the storage unit auction gold rush. The lure of easy money has people flocking to these auctions, hoping to score big, but can they? On the line with us right now from Colorado is America's leading collector and treasure hunter, Aaron Lapidus. He's the author of The Garage Sale Millionaire. He's also a former TV show host and has a monthly column in the Denver Post. Hi, Aaron.
How you doing today?
I'm doing just tickety-boo. So people are jumping on this bandwagon. I guess the economy has a lot to do with that. Let's back up a little bit. How did you get involved in this?
Writing my book, I had the opportunity to go to a lot of storage unit auctions and estate sales and the garage sales. So I decided to help people understand how to make money going to all these places and kind of laying it out for them, showing it to them how they can do it as a business.
Where
the book came from.
Yeah, I'm guessing the economy, the way it is, has a two-pronged approach. First of all, as I said in the introduction, with the popularity of such television shows as Storage Wars, you end up with more people out there who are thinking that they can make money this way because they can go to these auctions. But on the other side of the coin, because of the bad economy, there are more auctions. Is that correct?
Because of the bad economy, yes, there are a few more auctions, but now there are a ton of bidders because of these TV shows. And the concern is, well, my concern is, a lot of people, I'm finding out, are giving up their jobs or not looking for new jobs because they think they can do what these people are doing on TV, which is becoming very scary.
How difficult is it? I mean, what you seem to have a wide range of knowledge, not just to simply bid on something, but to know what to do with it and know what you have once you've won.
You do, especially since you have to kind of guess what is in the storage unit. So a lot of people are thinking that, you know, it's just so easy that anybody can do it. And you're instantly going to see jewelry, gold coins, antiques. You're going to all see stuff like that, which is going to make it very easy to, and you're going to pick it up all for $100. That is not the way it works. And unfortunately, if people do not have the expertise, they're going to buy stuff that's basically junk.
Well, from watching these shows, I mean, I think you just kind of touched on it just now, but from watching these shows, what are the biggest misconception, or maybe the biggest misconception people have in being at one of these auctions?
That these people, every single storage unit auction, somebody finds something that's worth thousands of dollars. The show is taken from maybe 100 storage units, and only the good ones make it on the air. And so that is what the problem is, that a lot of people are feeling that they can easily find something at every storage unit, and it makes it look like every storage unit has something wonderful in it.
What does it take, first of all, to have a storage unit end up in the auction? Does it merely have to go into default? And what kind of numbers are we talking about percentage-wise as far as storage units are concerned?
Basically, it's usually 90 days of non-payment. And usually on the 91st day, a storage unit will go into default. But on the other side, people always have to say, it's sad that these storage facilities are making money and are horrible people. They don't want these storage units to go into default. So they will make lots of phone calls, send letters, do whatever they can to try to get a hold of the people that have the storage units. And that's a lot of people don't know this. The storage unit facilities do not make money off the storage units. So whatever extra money after gets paid for the lateness and the unit rental, then is held in escrow for the client if they ever choose to come back. And that's something that people need to know, but it is not as easy as TV makes it seem to be.
So once someone buys a storage unit at auction, how fast do they have to clear it out, or do they just simply make the payments on it and they can hold on to it for a while?
Actually, they can do that, but a lot of people choose that they don't want to make any more payments. So they have 24 hours to clear it out. They usually have to put a deposit on the storage unit until it's completely cleared out. So if you get a storage unit that has a whole bunch of junk on it, you're responsible for cleaning it completely out. And on top of it, you can't use their trash dumpsters. You have to be able to get it all cleared out. And if it's good, great. If it's not, it's now the onus is on you.
And when it comes to people who want to try and do this for the very first time, do you have tips for people who think, even despite all the warnings, what should they do if they want to attempt to get into this game, as it were?
First people need to read a few books on antiques, coins, jewelry, get associated with collectibles, because that's what's going to make you a lot of money. Be understanding what you can see, and then also how you can sell it. You know, in my book, I teach about eBay and Craigslist and how to put on a great garage sale. These are all things that you need to learn once you get the unit, how to sell it, how to make money off of it. And that is so crucial. A lot of people clear it out and take it all to the flea market. Well, you're not going to get your top money there. And if you see items that are all bedding and clothes and stuff like that, then you run the risk that you may have a lot of junk that is going to be not have any money.
How long have you been doing this?
Garage sales, I've been doing it for probably around 20, a little bit more than 25 years. And estate sales, storage unit auctions, I started to do it 20 years ago. Now I don't do many of them anymore. It is a lot of work, and it's way too competitive. For every storage unit auction that I was going to 20 years ago, there was probably about 8 people showing up. Now you could have anywhere from 80 to 400 people showing up at a storage unit auction, depending what part of the United States or Canada that you live in.
And the reason why I asked the question is because you mentioned things like eBay and Craigslist, and I was just wondering how you've seen a change and if it's made the situation easier or harder with the advent of the internet in this game of garage sales and storage auctions.
You know, using the internet has made it a lot easier to sell everything and make a lot more money, but it has made it very, very difficult to now get a deal. Because once again, and I know I'm staying on this, but you know, when you're going up against 100 to 400 people on every storage unit auction, and people think that every storage unit has a treasure, you're not going to get a good deal. You're not going to get a good deal, and that's the thing. People are not trying to get a real job. They're thinking that there's a treasure in every room, and that is where things are becoming going awry. People are thinking that they're going to be rich, like the people on Storage Wars and the other knockoff ones, and it doesn't happen like that. Literally, they do several storage unit auctions to get a handful that have treasures in it.
So bottom line, you're watching these television shows, enjoy them for the entertainment. If you want to take it more seriously, do your homework and perhaps get a copy of The Garage Sale Millionaire, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because my book teaches you not only storage unit auctions, but garage sales, estate sales, how to use eBay, and a lot of other tricks on making money when, you know, times are tough. And you know, maybe storage unit auctions, maybe you try it and it doesn't work for you. There's other ways to make money in looking for treasures and being a treasure hunter.
And people can also go to your website at thegaragesalemillionaire.com.
Exactly. They can email me and ask me questions. If they go to my website, they can download a free garage sale checklist and also ask me questions. And if they like to go to Amazon.com to get the book, they can go there too.
Excellent. I thank you very much, Aaron, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me on.
Aaron Lapidus, author of The Garage Sale Millionaire. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com and go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0104, and you'll find links to Aaron's site, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly for the Kindle.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for now and forever, unless the Mayans were right.
And still to come on the Stuff File program, we'll meet a former NFL player who's now a certified yoga instructor. Plus, we'll also meet a ghost detective and the author of The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. But first, more Stuff File news for you right here, right now. Nothing wrong with leaving the rat race for a more satisfying career, but this one has to really top them all. 32-year-old Thomas Heathfield was a well-paid banking consultant with a very promising future in Maidenhead, England. But this year, he gave it all up to move to South Africa and endure rigorous training as a Sangoma, or what we know as a witch doctor. After 5 months of studying the Siswati language, sleeping in the bush, hunting for animal parts, vomiting up goat's blood, and to vomit up goat's blood, you have to ingest goat's blood, huh? Yeah. And also learning native dances, Heathfield was given a new name, Gogo Mdawi, and is now qualified to read bones and prescribe herbal cures for the roughly 50% of South Africa's population that reveres Sangomas. He admitted that he was somewhat concerned about his acceptance as a white man calling out African spirits, but says, "When the people see me dance, all their questions go away." Well, there's affirmative action in reverse for you, huh? Yeah. In Cape Coral, Florida, 23-year-old Owen Lemire Cato was arrested after an incident at McDonald's in which he completely grossed out his fellow customers by squeezing and popping the pimples on his back. He reportedly stood at the entrance of the restaurant for more than 10 minutes doing this. When an off-duty officer asked for his name, Cato initially told him it was John Smith, but then gave his real name and date of birth. The cooperation ended there as the suspect allegedly decided to flee. Another officer nearby noticed Cato run past his cruiser as he heard the call go out over the radio, and after a short foot chase, Cato was tackled and taken into custody. While searching him, officers reportedly found a syringe in his pocket, which Cato's girlfriend said he uses to inject blues or OxyContin. Dude, maybe rather than OxyContin, you should try some Oxy-10. Okay? Ugh. And a Singaporean army draftee caused a public stir in March when he was photographed by a visitor as he underwent physical training in army fatigues, but with his maid following him behind him as she carried his backpack on her shoulders. Army officials told reporters the draftee has since been counseled. You'd find this story far-fetched if it appeared in a Richie Rich comic, yet it actually happened. How delusional is this poor little rich boy, huh? In Gainesville, Florida, a 36-year-old woman managed to lose three fingers after she tried to wake up her boyfriend with fireworks. Yes, fireworks. The woman and her boyfriend told police that they had been drinking, go figure, before the incident at their apartment. The woman said she was holding a fireworks novelty item in her hand when she lit the fuse. She had been planning to toss the device out the front door, thinking it would make enough noise to wake up her boyfriend. Instead, the device exploded in her hand, tearing off her thumb, middle, and ring fingers. Ouch! The blast was so powerful that police said they found one bone remnant embedded in the ceiling. Ooh, real ouch. She was taken to the hospital. Her boyfriend told police he did not realize that the couple had any fireworks left over from the 4th of July. Excuse me, dear. Perhaps I can suggest to you the purchase of a relatively inexpensive alarm clock. But get an electric one, because I think you might have trouble in the future with the non-electric ones, you know, trying to wind it up. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Pablo Borgen has apparently been living without neighbors complaining in Lakeland, Florida, despite general knowledge that he is, according to sheriff's officials, one of the area's major heroin traffickers, bringing in tens of thousands of dollars a month. Now, following a drug sting in June, however, neighbors discovered another fact about Borgen, that he and some of his gang were each drawing $900 a month in food stamps. Formerly indifferent neighbors were outraged by Borgen's abuse of benefits. "Hang him by his toes," said one. "I've been out of work since February 2008. I lived for a year on nothing but food stamps." Okay, let me get this straight. Being the neighborhood drug dealer, that's cool. Stealing food stamps, that should be punishable by death. Wow. Here's a neighborhood that really needs to rethink its priorities. Don't you think? Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Keith Mitchell is a former NFL player with the New Orleans Saints and other teams. He had to retire because of a very bad spine injury that left him almost paralyzed. He's now back in perfect shape and is a certified yoga instructor and owns a celebrity yoga program in Los Angeles with his girlfriend, Amy Lynn Grover. Keith joins us on the line from L.A. Hi, Keith.
How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You don't hear, and maybe this is changing now in this day and age, but there was a time when you never heard the words NFL player and yoga in the same sentence.
Times are changing. but it's much needed for the industry. I mean, you take such a beating, you know, playing a game, and you know, it's just a rehabilitative type healing process for athletes who put themselves through such traumatic, you know, situations.
When did you start yoga? Were you still playing at the time, or is this something you always did?
No, actually, I started when I took that injury. I was actually with the Jaguars. I was, you know, making a hit like I've made a thousand times, and you know, for some reason, my body, you know, after the hit, didn't have any functionality. You know, I was paralyzed. I was flat on my back. I had never been in a situation like that before in my life, and I didn't know what to do. He's there, so the doctors kind of gave me my body just time to heal. And once we started healing and getting some mobility back, yoga was my therapy.
If you knew then what you know now, would you have considered a yoga something that was part of your workout regime when you were a player and even earlier?
Almost definitely. I mean, yoga is such a good practice for you physically, but as well as mentally, though. You know, a lot of people, you know, think of the physicality, but the reality is, I mean, I would say that the success rate, you know, in the NFL is due to your mentality. You know, it's 70% mental. You know, you can find, like, I'm 6'3", I was 255 when I played. You know, I thought I had some good speed, but you can find that kind of, you know, that kind of project anywhere. But what makes you different is the mind state. You have to believe that you can do it, you know, you can do what you say you can do. So I think that's the biggest separation between players and players.
So how did you find yoga, especially after your injury? What brought you to yoga in the first place?
Well, luckily, I had a physical therapist who introduced it to me, you know, and I just started getting, you know, such good results from it. You know, to tell you the truth, I mean, I didn't know if playing was going to ever be an option again. So, you know, it was a kind of, I have to admit this, it was sort of like a depressed state that I was kind of going through. And, you know, after being retired, I kind of see some of my friends who've been leaving the game, not due to injury, but due to just, you know, getting old. And realizing that your body can only hold up for so long. Well, as an athlete, you kind of go through this mental state when you lose the game, because as a person, that becomes your personality. That becomes who you are. And a lot of people get consumed and caught up with that whole, you know, athletic figure and the superstar figure and all those things. But really, I had to come into touch with who is Keith Mitchell, the individual. So that's a big revelation for a lot of people. And it's kind of hard.
Now, you started yoga, as you say, as part of your rehabilitative process, but as I mentioned in the introduction, you're now a certified yoga instructor and you own a celebrity yoga program in Los Angeles. While you were going through your rehab, did you have some kind of aha moment where you thought, this is something I could do not only for my own rehabilitation, but as a post-playing career?
Well, I don't think I thought that far ahead, actually, to be honest. I was just kind of just, you know, in that moment and just learning and kind of living it. And as I, you know, started to get better and realizing the injuries that I didn't really realize that I had. Because a lot of times, Peter, when we get through these certain injuries, we think, okay, we iced them, we put heat on them, and they're going away forever. But the reality is, once you get over 35, these things start coming back because they've been implanted in us for so long. So you start feeling the injuries, the aches and pains and things of that nature, and you're looking for relief. And medication, for me, wasn't the option. So how do you get relief? And, you know, through my yoga practice, I started getting those things and seeing, you know, some of my teammates and guys who have left the game thus far and seeing the pains that they're going through. I mean, and to do the things I'm doing now, and I see these guys, they can't do half.
Now, do you have a website?
Yes, www.coolerdivide.com.
Now, it's Cooler Divai. What exactly is Cooler Divai? What does that mean?
Well, Cooler means group. That's K-U-L-A. That means group, clan. Divai means God and goddess. So it's basically like an empowerment of you know, abilities that we have within us.
Okay, we're having a bit of a problem. Your phone is breaking up. Can you repeat what you just said?
I said, on Cooler means group, it means clan. Divai is God and goddess. It's basically empowering the individual, tapping into the God and goddess in each one of us.
And for yourself, and also for your clients, how much time do you recommend people partake in performing yoga?
Well, I do the physical practice about, you know, I try to get it two or three classes in a week. But the reality for me, yoga is just really being in tune with the breath work. You know, you can be driving the car, you could be sitting in a meditative stance or posture, you know, and just focusing on breathing. It's being in tune with your breath. So
you had a pretty good career as a football player. A lot of players have great NFL careers. Do you think yourself and teammates, friends that you knew in the NFL, friends that you know now in the NFL, would be better players if they performed yoga?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we're going into a phase in sports, it seems like, you know, everyone's looking for the supplement, the alternative, to whatever it is to play better, to achieve the unachievable. And I think for a lot of athletes, if they came to an understanding of what yoga can do for you, you know, we would eliminate a lot of things that are happening, especially, you know, a lot of things that are happening in society, people making bad choices off the field and as well as on the field, and being just in tune to your game. It's just a whole, plane of knowledge that we have limited understanding about for is our physical ability. I've learned so much more after leaving the game and understanding these things. And what, you know, if I would have had these ideas when I played, I mean, I probably would have had an even better career.
You know, you mentioned that you use it as a rehabilitative tool for yourself when you had your injury. What about as a preventative tool? And by that, I mean, we're in a situation right now, especially with the lockout and the short season or the short training camp season that the NFL has. There's the potential this year for a lot of injuries. Would yoga help to prevent those?
Oh, it definitely will, you know, and the thing about it, what I'm trying to incorporate is, you know, a lot of the argument through the lockout was because of the retired players and the injuries that they sustained and being able to survive and live, you know, in society with having these injuries from their past. And I say, well, let's not just have the fun ready for when they have to have a hip replacement or shoulder replacement, things of that nature. Let's create a preventative, program that can eliminate and stop the surgeries and things of that nature. You know, let's create that, because with having that, then these guys can live a happier life. When you're in that agony physically, and it's a constant pain for you, I mean, it's a lot of times unbearable. You're taking all these medications. That's not a good feeling. So To create a program that's going to eliminate some of the pain, I think these guys will appreciate life a lot better and have an opportunity to live a better life with those things being, you know, changed.
You have certainly turned your life around and probably in a direction you would never have imagined years ago. Would that be fair to say?
I never would imagine. But, you know, I mean, you know, life for me is a constant, you know, journey. It's a constant, you know, learning. It's a balancing act. My teacher told me, you know, you never stick to balance. You know, you constantly have to work at it to stay balanced. You know, when if you can imagine yourself being on a balance beam, you're never just there and everything is okay. It's a constant, okay, lean a little bit to the left, lean a little bit to the right, you know, to stay balanced. But it's just, you know, that's the beauty of it. That's what makes it worth living, right?
Absolutely.
So I enjoy it.
The website again is?
It's KulaDevi.com. So www.KulaDevi. We also have a fan page on Facebook. You know, we'd love to have in and everybody out and come practice with us. We would love it.
Keith, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you for having me, Peter. Anytime.
Keith Mitchell, former NFL player, now certified yoga instructor. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0104, and you'll find links to Keith's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. While the debate in our nation's capital has focused on the national debt ceiling, there's been too little debate about what needs to be done to eliminate wasteful spending. However, a new study should jumpstart this needed debate. The study was published in the journal Health Affairs, and it reveals something very disturbing about medical malpractice lawsuits. It found that 6 out of 10 lawsuits filed against healthcare providers are not settled or decided in trial. They are simply abandoned. The biggest reason? The alleged malpractice never occurred. Let's be fair. Speculative lawsuits against doctors have led to a huge increase in defensive medicine. More and more of the cost for these tests will be covered by taxpayers in the future because of nationalized health care. But this study shows that most of those tests are simply unneeded. Medical liability reform could save taxpayers billions. Lawmakers need to focus on eliminating expensive and unnecessary defensive medicine. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come in the program, we'll talk about haunted San Francisco. And of course, there is an idiot of the day coming your way. But we have some more Stuff File news to get to before all of that. In Longview, Washington, Police Sergeant Ed Jones said, "It looks like alcohol was involved." We're quite inclined to agree with him. He's talking about the story of 56-year-old Gordon Flavia, who allegedly plowed his Jeep into a carport at a Longview Riverfront condominium. The Jeep and carport were totaled, and Flavia fled on foot. Say that fast 5 times. Police later found him hiding inside a portable toilet in a field north of Waste Control. He was soaking wet and smelled awful. He later told police he had splashed himself with the contents of a bucket in the toilet because, quote, he thought the dogs were coming and he was trying to throw off the scent. Okay, that's just nasty. He was taken to a hospital for minor injuries and could be charged with driving under the influence pending the outcome of toxicology tests taken at the hospital. He may also be charged with hit and run. And please, please tell me the toxicology tests come back positive, because if he was stone cold sober when he did this, then he's just a complete moron. Okay. In Bismarck, North Dakota, a fight between a brother and sister over which TV channel to watch ended with one of them getting stabbed. Police said 21-year-old Damia Johnson stabbed her 15-year-old brother with a kitchen knife after arguing about changing the television channel. The wounded 15-year-old then grabbed a wooden pole and assaulted his sister. Both of them were taken to hospital, and Damia was arrested and is being held at the Ward County Jail. The 15-year-old brother has been referred to juvenile court. Oh, the parents must be so proud. And more than 800 Russians have been taking part in what has to be the world's weirdest water race ever. The annual Bubble Bubba Challenge on the Vuska Rapids, about 50 miles from St. Petersburg, takes just 3 minutes to complete, but the contestants all have to ride the rapids on blow-up sex dolls. The event's organizer, Dmitry Balawinov, said it started as a joke at a party when the men got drunk and the women didn't show up. Sounds like typical Russia, actually, don't you think? And although hugely outnumbered by enthusiastic males, women do compete in the contest too. The ladies were allowed to use inflatable men, but had to provide their own, as apparently male blow-up dolls are considerably more expensive than their female counterparts. I have nothing to add to that. Except for the fact that we have one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program. Police in Cincinnati said Jamila Turnbow was attacked simply because of what she was wearing. No, it wasn't sexy hot pants and a halter top. It was actually a very modest set of dark overalls, but she had the misfortune of walking by just as a police officer let one of the police dogs loose to answer the call of nature. Now, the outfit Jamila was wearing had a strong resemblance to the bite suit used during canine training, so the dog reacted as he had been trained to and attacked. Jamila got a 3-inch cut on her upper right arm from the attack, but Police Sergeant Daniel Hills stated in a memo to police higher-ups that her attire and the dog's response doesn't excuse what he describes as the canine officer's lack of attention and control of his canine partner. Hills is recommending a reprimand and has ordered that no police dogs be allowed off their leash in public. And that sound you hear, by the way, is the dripping of saliva coming from the mouths of the personal injury attorneys who are just lining up at Jamila's front door right about now. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Annette Martin is a psychic detective and ghost hunter. She is also the co-author of a new book called The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. She joins us on the line right now from California. Hi, Annette.
Hi, Peter. How are you? It's so nice to talk to you again.
It's nice to talk to you again as well. Let's talk about this book, The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. First of all, just how haunted is San Francisco?
Oh, it's pretty haunted. It really is. And our book, The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco, is really a one-of-a-kind guidebook that shows you how to find publicly accessible haunted places that lie unsuspected in San Francisco's most famous tourist destinations, like Alcatraz, Chinatown, the Presidio, the Moss Beach Distillery, the Mansions Hotel, all places like that.
Well, I was going to ask you about Alcatraz, because I'm assuming there's a lot of ghosts there.
Well, actually, there aren't, but I did find one ghost there. But Alcatraz has a many what we call residual hauntings, which is like a video that is being played over and over again. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes, yes.
Yes, and we discovered many residual hauntings there at Alcatraz. And we had filmed the show for the History Channel, and it was just really amazing. The most amazing one for me was we went upstairs and up to where they had the hospital, and they don't let the general public go up there anymore. And they had taken all kinds of signs down and everything. And we walked by this one door, and I said to Lloyd, my partner, who's a parapsychologist, I said, "Oh, we have to go in here." And he said, "Do we really? I really don't like the feeling that I'm getting from this room." I said, "No, we have to go in here." And so we walked in the room. And, Peter, it's like when I walk into a residual haunting or an impression, it's like I'm walking through a soap bubble. You know how you blow bubbles for your kids?
Right.
Yeah. And that's kind of what it's like. And so it's like I step inside of it. And so I walked in this room, and I immediately ran over to the walls, and I kept seeing all these cards and letters and pictures put up on the wall. And then I saw like a small library with all kinds of books and a bed. And then I saw this man, and he was walking around. And one minute, he looked like he was very sane. And then the next minute, it was like he was totally insane. I could not believe it. And I'm describing this man to the film crew and the director. And after we finished, the director says, "Well, Annette, you are spot on, because this is the Birdman's cell."
The Birdman of Alcatraz, Stroud. Right.
Yeah, Robert Stroud.
Now, we should mention that you mentioned Lloyd, and Lloyd Auerbach is the person who you've written this book with, The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco, correct?
Correct. And Lloyd and I have worked together for 15 years. Okay. So we've done a lot of investigations. So let me tell you about the real ghosts at Alcatraz. So I went back at another separate time, and I knew, my husband and I knew two of the guards. And so they said, "We're going to take you to places that nobody gets in to see." And I said, "Okay, great." So they took us down to one of these buildings where the inmates did the washing and the cleaning of the hats and the gloves and the shirts for the Army and the Navy. I had no idea they did that. But anyway, we walked into this room, and we're walking around and looking at all the old equipment that's in there, which is very, very interesting. And all of a sudden, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, and I went, "Oh, I think that's somebody." And sure enough, I turned and looked, and there was a man standing there, a ghost. And I said, "Oh, who are you?" And he said, "My name is Alan. Who are you?" He asked me. I told him who I was and why we were there. And we started this conversation. Of course, I'm the only one talking. But anyway, I asked him why he was there. And he said that he died at Alcatraz. He had terrible stomach ulcers. And he also got pneumonia. And so I asked him if he would like to go into the light. And he said, "Oh, no. No," he said, I don't want to go into the light because I was really bad. I was a very bad man. And I don't think anyone is going to be there for me." And so I decided to stay, and I stay in this room. And I have a beautiful view. And I looked over at the windows, and the windows look straight out to the Golden Gate Bridge. And I'm telling you, Peter, it is the most magnificent view. It's just absolutely amazing.
So do ghosts know that they're ghosts?
Yes. Most of the time. I've only run into one who didn't know that they were dead.
By the title of the book, The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco, would lead me to believe that San Francisco might be more haunted than other places. Would that be an accurate statement?
I would say so, yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because maybe because of the weather. I don't know. There are different reasons why people have stayed and why we have a ghost. At the Queen Anne Hotel, we have two ghosts. We have Mary Lake, who was the lady who ran the girls' school there in 1890, and a little girl about 10 years old who passed away actually at the girls' school. And so they're together, and many people have seen them. And I don't know. I think maybe, you know, San Francisco has a certain charm to it. I'm a native San Franciscan, so I can say that.
Now, one gets the feeling or assumption that when you talk about ghosts, that generally speaking, like the fellow from Alcatraz and all the others from Alcatraz, that they are either bad people or tortured souls. That's not always the case, is it?
No, that is not the case. No. And they all have different stories. Many people just don't want to leave. Some are afraid to leave, but a lot of them are just kind of normal people.
Do you ever think, I mean, you're somebody who studies this, you've written books about it, you discuss the paranormal, you're a psychic detective, you're a ghost hunter. Do you ever think what happens or what your life will be like after your final breath on this earth? Will you be a ghost?
I don't think so. I think I'm going to go into the light.
Why do you think that is?
Because we have free will. We have free will, whether we want to go into the light or we want to stay here and become a ghost.
So the ghosts who are out there because they want to be.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And now I have helped several people cross over into the light, but the majority of them have wanted to stay for one reason or another.
Hmm. It's very interesting indeed. The book is called The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. People can also go to your website, correct?
Absolutely.
And the
go ahead.
And the website is www.annette-martin.com.
Correct.
Annette, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you, Peter. It was a delight talking to you.
Annette Martin, co-author of The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0104, and you'll find links to Annette's site, plus links to Amazon.com, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
And thanks to Bob Welsh of WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont, for bringing this clown to our attention. The story comes from Belfast, Maine. Police say a Lincolnville man accused of stealing a credit card was caught after he called the issuing bank to check on how much credit he had left. Jesse Grinnell, 22, recently stole a backpack from a parked vehicle. Camden police contacted police in Belfast to alert them that the stolen card had been used twice at a variety store. The video surveillance system at Belfast Variety captured footage of the two fraudulent transactions, but no one could recognize the man using the card. However, when Grinnell allegedly called the Bank of America to double-check the remaining credit on the stolen card, the bank automatically recorded his phone number. Detective Sergeant Brian Cunningham was able to put the phone number into police records and found that it belonged to Grinnell. A police mugshot of Grinnell from a prior arrest showed that it was indeed the same man that had driven up to the Belfast Variety with the stolen credit card. Grinnell has been charged with burglary of a motor vehicle, theft by unauthorized taking, forgery, operating after revocation, and theft by deception. They should be able to tack on one more charge because, you know, if you steal a credit card, use it, then call the bank to check the credit limit and not block your caller ID while doing so, you should also be charged with the crime of being an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0104. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0104. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com, and you could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, aboard China Airlines, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Any rebroadcast of this copywritten program in whole or in part without the express written consent of...
Oh, God, who the hell are we kidding? Who's going to steal this show? God, who writes this stuff? Holder, what a kidder.